Hope everyone slept well. I know I did, once I got to sleep. There's something talking about spirituality and this way of life and self-examination, meditation, and prayer that, I mean, I don't know, I thought about once I got into meditation, I would be this calm, mellow human being, and quite frankly, I thought I'd be a bore. And there's just something about talking about and living, more so living this way of life that just gets me charged up. And when I do things like this, I just, for the most part now, I usually get charged up. There used to be a time where I would just be totally worn out, and I think a lot of that was about self-will, and I think a lot of that was about ego. And a lot of that was about trying to cram 10 pounds of poop in a 5-pound bag, you know, trying to do 15 hours in a weekend with something like this. And, you know, again, like we said last night, hopefully a lot about what this weekend will be about is relax and take it easy, you know. I have a reading that I would like to share with everyone. It's about prayer. How appropriate, huh? Prayer is all over space. The stars are prayerful. The trees are prayerful. The oceans are prayerful. Except for man, the whole existence is always in a state of prayer. Only man needs to move towards it consciously for a certain reason. Man is the only conscious animal. Hence, man has a choice. He can fall out of the natural flow of existence, or he can become part of it. No other animal has that freedom. The birds in the morning are not singing out of their own choice. They are simply singing instinctively. The trees are prayerful. The mountains are prayerful. But that prayer is just a natural phenomena. Man's dignity is that he can choose to be prayerful. But that can also become his fall, because he can also choose not to be prayerful. Man is always at a crossroads. Each step, and there is a choice. Each step, and you can go wrong or right. When sadness and cheerfulness confront you, always choose cheerfulness. When seriousness and playfulness confront you, always choose playfulness. And remember, we become whatsoever we choose. It is simply a question of choice.
My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Good morning. I have a nice hallucination going because I didn't get enough sleep. I was listening to a tape one time, one of my favorite speakers, Earl H. from California, and he shared about how when he first came to AA, he had a real problem with this whole God thing and this whole prayer thing. And his sponsor got really imaginative and really creative and probably a little frustrated and suggested two prayers to him to start the day and to end the day with that are simply one word. He said to him, when you start your day, get on your knees and say, whatever. And at the end of the day, get on your knees and say, enough. And then go to sleep. I love that. It's very simple. It's very basic. There's lots of power in those two words. Whatever and enough. Just enough. Let me just shut my mind off and let me just go to sleep. Tomorrow's another day. I'll pick it up when tomorrow happens. Very spiritual prayers. Very simple prayers. There's another evening prayer that I suggest that whenever I suggest this prayer to people, I always say, do not say this tonight. Wait until tomorrow to start saying it, because it's sort of a self-sabotage prayer, so to speak. The prayer goes something like this. And like I said, it's to be said at night, and it should not be said on the night that you first hear it and plan on using it. The prayer goes, Lord, may the people I meet tomorrow treat me like I treated them today. Self-sabotage prayer, because it forces us to be good to people today because we're asking God to let them treat us tomorrow the way we treated them today. This morning we thought we'd open with how the 12 and 12 in the big book talks about starting our day. Hopefully some of you or most of you or all of you have done a little prayer meditation this morning. But what we're going to do is we're going to go through the how to start our day and little tips throughout the day that are mentioned in the Big Book and in the 12 and 12. The amazing thing is that in the last couple of years, in studying Step 10 and 11, as well as lots of other parts of the Big Book, it never ceases to amaze me that I still find stuff that I never noticed before. There is so much power and so much of a way of life just in Step 10 and 11 that is really, it's almost like even if we just do some of it, it's a very powerful way of life. That was where we got the name for the weekend, this weekend, an unshakable foundation for life. And the 12 and 12 talks about that, you know, self-examination, meditation, and prayer, when taken separately, they're powerful tools. But when related and logically interwoven, that it creates an unshakable foundation for life. And the Big Book and the 12 and 12 get into what we would call the disciplines of Step 10 and 11. It specifically says how to start the day and what to do and how to kind of get into it, bringing God into it pretty immediately. It gives us tips throughout the day. And then last night we kind of went over some inventory out of the Big Book, and probably tonight we'll go into a little bit of a meditation with the tips that the 12 and 12 suggest on how to inventory us at the end of the day. So it's interesting because both Mike and I had the same experience, that we had done a pretty thorough job of going through the steps, and we really didn't get into 10 and 11 right away. We had such a profound experience with the first 9 steps that it was almost like, you know, almost, I hate to use the expression, but we almost kind of, it was almost secondary. And it was almost like, it's almost like you don't need it. You had such a wonderful experience with the first 9 steps. But both of us, in focusing and implementing the way of life mentioned in Step 10 and 11, that was when a whole new aspect of our spirituality and a whole new aspect of the peace that we were experiencing and the results that we were getting just exploded upon us. And I don't think that it was a coincidence that the beginning of Step 10 and I kind of see Step 10 and 11 as sort of being together, just like I see 6 and 7 together and 7 and 8 or at 8 and 9 together. And the beginning of Step 10 talks about that we practice this way of life as we cleaned up the past. And how I internalize that is that we start doing 10 and 11 as soon as we start making amends and start going out to make amends. That as soon as we start cleaning up the past, we're also supposed to be starting to use 10 and 11. I don't do all my amends and then start doing 10 and 11. And I'm supposed to do it as I'm doing my amends. And again, there's just so many incredible things in both of these books about 10 and 11, and we'd like to sort of highlight that now. What I always suggest to people is that after I've heard their fifth step and we got into 6 and 7, 5, 6, and 7 all being done on the same day, in a few days they've already basically gotten their list of harms that they need to make amends for, and then start making amends, that within a few days after that, I have them on 10 and 11. And we go over 10 and 11 in detail. And what I have them do for the next few months is to, when they start their day, to read 10 and 11 out of the Big Book. It's actually 3 full pages, and it starts with a half a page and ends with a half a page. So it's simply 4 pages out of the Big Book. And again, in internalizing that way of life and in keeping it in mind as we go through the day, it's been an incredible tool for me to deal with things. You know, I don't know about anybody else here, but I really had no tools to deal with life. I mean, I was 30, and I had no tools to deal with life. I mean, I just kind of went along doing whatever I wanted to do, freaking out constantly. My last name is Lash, so lashing out at people just comes naturally for me. I mean, and it was just amazing. And even through times of major turmoil, you know, I don't think that it's a coincidence that 10 talks about continue, 11 talks about seeking and improving, and 12 talks about practicing and in all of our affairs. I don't see those kind of words as leaving room for complacency. I don't see how I see all the steps, but especially the last 3 steps, is walking up a down escalator. That as long as I keep moving, I can get to the next level. But as soon as I slow down or as soon as I stop, it brings me right back down to where I came from. And that's my experience with spirituality, and that's my experience with practicing this program. In the Big Book, when it talks about starting our day, it begins by saying, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. And I like personalizing the book. When it talks about we, when it's talking about an alcoholic, I like personalizing and saying me and I. So that's what I'm going to do throughout this. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. I shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than I are using it constantly. It works if, one, I have the proper attitude, and two, work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And again, in a very short period of time, it's amazing the suggestions that are thrown out here. It's really easy to like talk about it. It's really easy to hear about it. It's really easy to tell other people to do it. But, you know, just like alcohol, I have to actually use it in order to get something from it. Then it goes through the evening review, which we covered last night. Then it talks about on awakening in the middle of page 80. On awakening, I consider my plans for the day.
86.
Oh, 86. I'm sorry. I'm writing over it. Step 10 and 11 has so much notes on it, it's just sick for my book. I cringe to have to transfer it into the fourth edition, but I have to do it because it's just way past the point where I should have done it already.
That's why you're hallucinating all the highlights.
Right. My book is kind of tie-dyed. I never use the same color. And people think it's like color-coded or something. I'm just not that, you know, disciplined. It has nothing to do with that. It's just whatever I find, I use it to write something. And
the only problem is he has all the wrong stuff highlighted.
It says, upon awakening, let me think about the 24 hours ahead. I consider my plans for the day. Before I begin, I ask God to direct my thinking, especially asking that I be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, I can employ my mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. My thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when my thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And then it talks about, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. I may not be able to determine which course to take. Here I ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. I relax and take it easy. I don't struggle. In the original manuscript, the next line said, ask God's help. Then it continues, we are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. There's a little bit of a warning there. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. And then it gets into some prayer after we do the meditation. Now, notice that it says on awakening. To me, that doesn't mean at some point in the morning. It doesn't mean after I've showered and eaten and dressed and I'm on my way to work in my car. For me, on awakening means right after I wake up. So how I practice this is after I wake up, I pee, I wash out my mouth, I sit down, and I get with God. To be honest with you, the reason why I do that is because my mind hasn't woken up yet, and I kind of trick it, and I kind of get in there before it actually can fight me against it. Also, I think for me it's important to immediately let God know that he's a priority and immediately bring God into whatever it is that I'm going to be doing because, again, my mind really hasn't woken up yet. My ego hasn't woken up yet. My fear and self-centeredness hasn't started chewing on me. I immediately get God in there, and I immediately shine that light inside of me as well as outside of me. So for me, on awakening is a specific direction, and in practicing it specifically that way, it's been much more powerful than when I used to wait a little while to get into it. And it says, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. You know, how often have we heard AA is, this day program? It's a 24-hour plan that yesterday is gone, tomorrow hasn't come, let's just focus on today. And like we were saying yesterday, let's just focus on this minute, let's just focus on this moment. But sometimes we need to deal with, you know, what's going to be happening today and kind of prepare for it. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't get insurance policies, and that doesn't mean that we don't go to school to get a, you know, but in this moment, whatever, when I'm coming from my heart, something we didn't share yesterday was that when we're in this moment, we have that moment of passion and intense focusing on just what's happening here and now, something happens that is not fathomable until you experience it. And what happens when we're totally in the moment is that all of a sudden everything slows down and this moment just opens up and what the next right thing is to do becomes really obvious most of the time. When we're totally in the moment, we just know what the next right thing is to do. It's not a logic thing. It's just that we're just here and now and all of a sudden this moment slows down and opens up. And it's a really incredible experience and it's a really incredible way of life. And, you know, in meditation, and we'll share this as we do meditations throughout today and maybe tomorrow, that when our mind drifts off and we get away from the meditation, or we get away from this moment, the moment that we realize that, we are now back in the moment again. That maybe our mind drifts off a little bit, but the moment that we realize that, we've already brought ourselves back to the moment, because in this moment we realize we drifted off. So like some of us, I remember in the beginning that I used to beat myself up. Oh no, I've drifted away from the moment, or I've gotten out of the meditation, or I've wandered or whatever. And what I'm being taught now is to not have really an emotional reaction to it. That the moment that I realize that I've drifted off, I am now back in the moment again. And that I should unemotionally and even happily just see that I'm now back there again and stay there and try to stay there as much as possible. And again, it's just really strange because all of a sudden everything just slows down and it opens up and it becomes real obvious what the next right thing is to do without really logic getting involved at all. And it talks about in considering our plans for the day, before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonors, and self-seeking motives. So let's, for the next few minutes, just get still and get comfortable. And perhaps take out a piece of paper and a pen, if you want. Because something I like doing is that there's a technique that we shared in the packet called How to Listen to God that the Oxford Group used to use and the early AAs used to use and lots of people still today use. And it talks about asking God to direct our thinking first thing in the morning, and that when thoughts come, we write them down so that we don't forget them. And then we test them in a certain way, and I'll share that after we're done. And maybe talk to somebody about it just so we don't go off on a wall, because lots of people who thought they were spiritual, lots of people who thought they were receiving guidance and perhaps bought some Kool-Aid and killed all their followers, thought that they were hearing guidance from God. And perhaps if they share it with somebody else, that other person can say, wait a minute here, you know. I think that's a little bit off, you know, but we have a way of testing it, and that's what's really cool about that technique of how to listen to God. So why don't we, just for the next maybe 5 minutes, get quiet. I'm going to read those directions again. Okay, yeah.
Mike, you sound bad.
Oh, well. and if you could, close your eyes. And just get still. Again, try not to think about yesterday or dip into tomorrow, and just think about this moment and the next few moments, perhaps the next half a day or so. And just ask God to help you direct your thoughts, that they be divorced from self-seeking and self-pity and dishonest motives. And as things come through your consciousness or pop into your head, whether you think they're inspired thoughts or not, just begin to write them down. Because sometimes if we try to keep track of it, we miss the next moment because we're trying to remember what happened the moment before. And don't necessarily go off on a bunch of stuff. Just put a little bullet statement and close your eyes again and see what else comes. And let's do that for the next few minutes. Again, perhaps repeat to yourself, Lord, please direct my thinking. Another way that I sometimes word it inside myself is, I say, God, where would you have me go? What would you have me do? What would you have me say, and to whom? Right, that's about 5 minutes. I've never known anyone that started using that on a daily basis that didn't start having a profound experience with it. Perhaps the first few times it's a little, seems a little blocked, perhaps, let's call it. But I've never known anyone that didn't use that daily for a period of time that didn't start saying, you know, something is happening and I really can't explain it. What also starts to happen is I don't even need to keep track of it anymore with how much time goes by, because what begins to happen is as I get quiet and as I get still within myself, I can feel almost a sense of something turning on and this process beginning, and thoughts start coming to me. And then all of a sudden it kind of just shuts off, or it just stops, or my brain starts racing and it's real obvious that I'm just not connected anymore. And then I just kind of sense that, okay, this session is over, and then I see what I have written. Now, what the Oxford group did and what the early AAs did and what this pamphlet suggests is not all thought is inspired or comes from God, or however you want to word it. So how can we test it? How can we see, you know, what is human thought and what is perhaps inspired thought? And what the Oxford group used was they had a technique of these 4 points that they would test their guidance. They would live this way as a way of life. They would use it as a tool to inventory, sort of like a 4-step. And what they were called were the 4 absolutes. Absolute love, absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, and absolute purity. And the 3 words are pretty self-explanatory, but the word purity sort of has a bad rap this day and age. It's not just talking about sexual acts and sexual thought. It's also talking about pure motives. That, you know, am I doing something to help somebody because I want something, or am I doing something to help somebody just to be helpful? So that would be included in purity also.
If you look on the bottom of page 26 of the packet, you can see the 4 absolutes that Bill's talking about. And as he'll probably mention in a second, you can also see their opposite, which comes from the big book.
Yeah, the opposite of the four absolutes are actually not necessarily in our literature, but the opposites of the 4 absolutes are in the 4-step, they're in the 10th step, and they're in the 11th step. like I said, the pamphlet which is in there, which kind of goes into detail, it talks about, is called How to Listen to God, and that's in the pamphlet also. And that's just a little technique of, you know, talking about using a technique that the Big Book talks about in planning for our day and just asking God to direct our thinking. And I always like encouraging people to write it down, because what could be more important than perhaps inspired thought of God helping us and directing us throughout the day? And what people used to do with the Four Absolutes was they would have sort of guidance friends, and they would call people and say, you know, this is what I got in guidance, and they would share it with them, and they would match it up with the Four Absolutes. And like some of the things that I got today was to thank Bonnie and Ozzy for having us here this weekend, to thank the bunch of friends that came here that we know to support us. We're truly grateful for that, and especially Sammy, because he's helping run in the 50-50, and anybody else that's helped us in any way with what we're trying to do this weekend. This next one has come before for me, and that's to look into going back to school. This next one is also reoccurring, to call my mother. My mother loves hearing from me, and I got to be honest with you, that's new. And that's something that is a beautiful benefit of trying to live a spiritual life, is that my mother loves hearing from me. What came to me was they asked the two ladies from Pennsylvania that are friends of ours to go see a movie at 1:30. I want to go see Anger Management. And it's playing in town at 1:30, which is just between the two breaks, so maybe I can fit it in. Also what came was to let Mike do the acceptance part, because we're going to do something on acceptance later on that's really powerful, which for me was really powerful. And again, what I would do with that guidance is, does it match up with unselfishness, love, purity, and honesty? And the movie might be a little selfish, because maybe I should stay around, although I would like to spend some time with the two ladies. But
would they like to spend time with you?
Yeah, maybe if they got any guidance, if they got any guidance, we're definitely going. But obviously the other ones are, honest, unselfish, loving, and pure. So, that's how the process in that little meditation works for me. Also in the How to Listen to God pamphlet, it also talks about what happens if I do that and things, you know, I seem to be blocked, and for a few days I don't seem to get anything. And that's one of the things I love about this pamphlet, if I can find it. Oh, it's on page 15. In this pamphlet, it talks about what blocks us from receiving guidance. Not only does it say to do this process, test it with the Four Absolutes, but it also mentions, which I think is really beautiful, and that's something I might mention later, is in the Big Book, it also talks about what blocks us from our higher power working in and through us, or at least us sensing it. Because, you know, the St. Francis Prayer talks about, you know, being a channel and letting the power and the light and the love of God to flow through us to others. That, you know, the Big Book talks about that faith, or rather God, has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or else we perish. That, you know, spirituality is sort of like a lake, that when water is coming into the lake and also water is going out of the lake, that water stays really clear and really pure. But as soon as one of those ends, or especially if the other end blocks up, that the water just starts to accumulate and it gets stagnant and it gets clogged. And for me, that's how spirituality is too, that God needs to be working in and through me, that I need to be altruistic and be helping others and trying to be of service to other people in order for this power to work in and through me. Because if I don't allow that to happen, it clogs up and it gets, you know, it's sort of like, sort of like a lake, that it just gets clogged up. That's been my experience. And what the blocks are that this pamphlet talks about is that, you know, it says, what if I didn't seem to get any definite thoughts or any guidance? It says, God's guidance is as freely available as the air we breathe. If I am not receiving thoughts when I listen, the fault is not God's. Usually it is because there is something that I will not do, something wrong in my life that I will not face and make right, a habit or indulgence I will not give up, a person that I will not forgive, a wrong relationship in my life that I will not give up, a restitution I will not make, or something that God has already told me to do that I will not obey. And I love that because, you know, there are times that I get stuck and I just don't understand what's going on. And I tell you, I've shared that with people, and every single time there was one of those points that somebody just knew that they hadn't done or that they should do, that they then did, and all of a sudden the guidance started coming back again. So for me, it's really beautiful that it also provides the blocks, because, you know, it's real easy to talk about, yeah, we should be loving, and yeah, we should be accepting, and yeah, we should be nice to people, and yeah, we should forgive people. But, you know, sometimes It's really easy to talk about stuff like that, but it's a whole other thing to actually do it. You know what I mean? And that's the beauty of our program, is that it gives us tools to bring us to the point where we're clear and we can be free of this stuff and we can actually do it most of the time, if not all the time. So, and we're going to fall short. And those can be lessons, too. You know? Why don't you go on, dude?
This is just one tool, one vehicle, if you will, the How to Listen to God pamphlet method to do morning quiet time and morning prayer and meditation. Hopefully we're going to be touching on a bunch of different things this weekend. And basically what we're just doing is throwing stuff out there for you to, if you choose to take advantage of it and try it and utilize it. And, if something speaks to your spirit and you're attracted to that, then go for it. Some people are more drawn to Christian practices. Myself, I seem to over the years I've practiced different things with the Bible. I've done this. I've gotten into the four absolutes. How to Listen to God method. I tried that for a while, and now I seem to be in a place in my life where I'm just more drawn to Eastern philosophies and practices. And we're going to try to not be biased, and we're going to try to throw it all out there. So again, this is just one vehicle. There, I guess if there's one thing that I could stress this weekend, when it comes to meditation, there is no right or wrong. You know, the question I need to ask myself is it working for me? And if not, then try something else. And for some reason, him and I have always just been open-minded since we got on this path. Maybe sometimes a little too open-minded, and we're just vessels, and we take all this stuff in, and different tapes and different books and different practices just come our way, or sometimes we won't get into that, but sometimes that can be a great asset, and sometimes that could be a great detriment. If you're trying to live on a budget, sometimes it could get a little hairy, but it's all to the good.
Also, there is a lot of, I guess maybe it touches some people, but there is a lot of stuff out there that I just didn't find as being powerful and along the lines of exactly what Mike's saying, how I would reword that sort of is just to follow your heart. What's been our path basically has been, it almost seems like a tape or a book almost leads us to the next one. It's almost like there's this flow of what's next, so to speak. Not necessarily because you need more and you always need more and it's never going to be enough, but it's just a sense of, this guy just mentioned this one book that was really powerful for him and I got a lot out of this book, so maybe if it was good for him, maybe it would be good for me, and that leads me to this other one, and this guy mentioned somebody or something and that brings me to here, and like all of a sudden there was this constant growth factor that was built into the flow of what led to the next thing. So for me, it's just kind of follow your heart.
A friend and I were talking last month, and we were just talking about, you know, the differences, the different religions and what we're attracted to, what our hearts are drawn to, and he seemed to just be more drawn to Christian things. And as I stated before, I'm currently more drawn to Eastern philosophies. And, you know, years ago, that would have created an argument between him and I. I mean, we would have just had a whole battle. My religion's better than your religion. You know, I mean, why do you think we're in war today? And what I came out of that whole conversation was, that's why God created two of us. Because some people in this room are going to be drawn to Christian practices, and some people are going to be drawn to Eastern philosophies, and other people are going to take the Native American path. You know, we have a friend of ours who's currently dabbling in rational recovery. You know, more power to him. I don't oppose any of that. You know, go with where your heart is. Give it all a try. So no matter what type of meditation we're practicing, when we come to the conclusion of that meditation on page 87, they give us some good prayers to conclude that meditation period with. And one of them says that we pray that we be shown all throughout the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. Now, I used to like to rationalize that and say, oh, I could help a lot of people, so I'm going to pray to win the lottery. I don't think that's what they're talking about here. You can pray for the lottery. You're spiritually evolved enough where you could do that. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. I love this next paragraph here. It says, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination or domination, depending on how you look at it, which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. I'm really not here to give plugs on books, but if you are interested in a prayer book, it's, I don't know, the best little prayer book I've found is called a 12-step prayer book, and it's put out by Hazleton, and I have it up here for anyone who wants to take a look at it during the breaks. This thing is just chock full of prayers. In the handout, you'll notice that that we listed a prayer for each step comes out of that book. I mean, they have prayers for everything. You got a problem, there's a prayer for it. You got a solution, there's a prayer for it. I have a little, I believe it's Catholic. I have a little Catholic prayer book at home, and that thing's neat too. Again, be open-minded about this stuff because it's going to tell us in a few lines, you know, see where religious people are right. See where spiritual people are right and make use of what they offer. And there are many helpful books too, some of them which we're going to be talking about this weekend. My wife and I have, we pray a lot together and we meditate together. And when we do, we see the results. And when we don't, we see the results. It has brought us so much closer together. You know, that whole triangle relationship that I talked about last night, we made a decision in the beginning of our marriage that God was going to be the foundation of our marriage. And when we share our prayer lives together and when we meditate together, it's just real obvious that God's the one in control. It's real obvious that God's the one that's the foundation. And without Him, as a couple, and not only as individuals, but as a couple, we are literally lost. And we've gone through times like that, you know. As I said, when we practice this way of life together, we see the results. And when we don't, we see the results too. I went off on a little tangent for a while, and I don't regret it. I think it was absolutely necessary, where my prayer and meditation life was my prayer and meditation life, you know. I got to the point where, I guess it was about 4 years ago, when I really started to take off in this area of the 11th step, and I heard a suggestion from a tape that said, if you're new to meditation, just buy a timer, set it for 3 minutes, and to the best of your ability, sit in the silence for those 3 minutes. And if you can get past those 3 minutes without the chatter of 1,000 monkeys in your head eating you alive, try for 4 minutes, then 5 minutes, and 10 minutes. And within a year, I was up to 60 minutes. And it was really great, and it was really wonderful, and it was really phenomenal. But what began to happen to me was that I forgot why we do this stuff. I forgot why we do these 10th and the 11th step practices. I forgot why we pray and meditate. And I thought it was all about making me a more spiritual person. And I forgot that what it really is about is helping the person that's right in front of me. So it got to the point where if we were having plumbing problems in the house, and Kathy would say, you know, I called the plumber and he's going to come at 8 a.m. in the morning. Well, how dare you? That cuts into my prayer and meditation time. Don't you know I need an hour and a half in the morning for prayer and meditation? Where's God in that? That's being real helpful, huh? But we learn through our mistakes, and I think that was a necessary evil for me to go through, and I don't regret that today, and hopefully harms that were created by that whole thing have been rectified. And I learned through my mistakes today. You know, as we were talking about, I don't remember if we were talking about it during the session last night or if we were talking about it after the meeting that we had last night until about 1 a.m., we were talking about our character defects becoming our friends. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous for me to resent resentment. It's ridiculous and futile for me to be angry with my own selfishness and to beat myself up over that stuff. I had to do it for a period of time. I had to do it until I realized it's not working for me. And now when I see selfishness rise up within me, I can say, oh, that's interesting, I'm being selfish, and then move away from it. And we're going to get to, as we go into the directions for all throughout the day, they give us some real neat tools to use in that. If you have an opportunity this weekend to pray with someone else and to share your meditation with someone else, we did it in the Oxford Group style prayer meeting this morning at 6:30. Powerful stuff, you know. So take advantage of this stuff. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the next right thought or action. Selfishness arise. Pause. Ask God for the next right thought or action. And that's something that can be practiced throughout this weekend. For resentment crops up, along with this, combined with the 10th step tools we're going to go over, pause. That's interesting. Resentment is there. I no longer have to be resentful. I can see the resentment crop up, but no longer attached to it. That's interesting. Anger is there. And usually when I identify that something crops up, usually that's just enough power and it tends to go away. If I'm able to separate myself from it and just watch it occur and not attach to it and not get emotionally involved in it, usually it goes away. And if it doesn't go away, then we have some great 10th step tools to handle that with.
And notice that agitated and doubtful. Agitated is our emotions and doubtful is our thinking. Those are really the only two ways that we can be disturbed. Now, I'd like to suggest that our emotions come from our thinking, but it mentions two words, so let's talk about that. Process to deal with it.
Deep doo-doo?
Did I sit down on
tape? Yeah, what is it with you?
Speaking of, I'm going to get a tan up here. You're going to need sunblock, dude.
First he talks about washing his mouth out after he pees. Now he's talking about deep doo-doo.
Actually, I meant peeing, too. That's, wow, this is...
As we may have said to a few friends of ours before we got started last night, if you think we'll be talking cured this weekend, you're in delusion.
Welcome.
We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, Thy will be done. Here's something to reflect upon. How many times throughout the day am I using this prayer, Thy will be done, Thy will not mine be done, which comes from the 10th step?
And the 12 and 12 says it too on page 87.
So how many times am I bringing that through my day? Thy will be done. Person cuts me off in traffic. Thy will be done. Person jumps in front of me in a grocery line. Thy will be done. Someone is taking a little bit too long in the grocery line. Thy will not mine be done. Not that I've had those problems or anything. The speakers are going on too long in a meeting, and I'd really like to get up and get a cup of coffee or use the facilities. Thy will not mine be done. And then we're in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. For we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. I love this. Here's the shortest paragraph in the entire big book. It works. It really does. And in the original manuscript, in the 1938 pre-multilith edition, before the big book was actually published, it said, it works, it really does. Try it. I like that. We alcoholics are undisciplined. If we were to do an entire weekend on just the big book, like a big book study, you would see that there are a lot of understatements in this big book. This is one of them. We alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. We let God discipline. I thought I was supposed to discipline me. I thought I was supposed to discipline my sponsees. I thought I was supposed to discipline my wife.
That's more than we needed to know.
Now, you can have fun with this, and I usually don't mind when she disciplines me, but we could have a separate workshop on sex inventory if you want. But that is not all, thank God. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. And I like something that Bill says. Faith without works is dead, and works without faith is frustrating. And then they're hooking us back to the precise reason why we're doing this work, why we're doing these practices, why we're praying and meditating, because the whole next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. I'm not doing this so I could become a better person. I'm not doing this so I become spiritually evolved. I'm not doing this so I could levitate above Mount Aeolus. I'm doing this so I could help my brothers and sisters. The next sick and suffering fellow traveler, just like me, because I'm sick and suffering. He says it all the time. I don't help people because they're sick. I need to be helping people because I'm sick, and I need to be helping people.
The book says again and again that thinking about me is a big part of my problem, and thinking about you is a big part of my solution.
I think what I'd like to do from here is to just whiz through some 10th step stuff, and then whatever time we have remaining in this session, I'll let Bill cover some of the 10th and 11th step practices from the 12 and 12. And as Bill mentioned before, I guess when you're new to the 10th and 11th step, it's for me it was like, okay, this part of my day is step 10. I'm doing step 10 right now. You know, I'm resentful. What do? I just realized that I'm resentful. I ask God to remove it. I discuss it with somebody else. And then after a while, I started to see how there is really no separation between the 10th and the 11th step. You could also add 12 in there, but we're really trying to concentrate on 10 and 11 this weekend. And there really is that direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. And it really is logically related and interwoven. And it really does provide an unshakable foundation for life. So we're going to go over some mechanics for the 10th and 11th step. But when you're practicing them throughout your day, it really is just a mishmash of spirituality, and it works quite well. Step 10 suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. In this one paragraph alone, he mentions the word continue 4 times. And if there's a couple spots through the steps where we see people fall and go back out and relapse. One of these places is when people don't continue. They might be well into their 9th step amends. They may even complete amends. But if I don't continue to do the things that brought me to this point and that will continue to allow me to grow and expand my spiritual life, then I'm going to go backwards. So I think the word continue is a word that we could just focus on for 30 days. You know? Meditate on that word continue for 30 days and nothing else. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. We could probably spend an entire weekend just talking about that one line. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Page 8 in Bill's story, he says that he was catapulted into the fourth dimension of existence. On page 25, they say that we get to be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. And then here, it says we have entered the world of the Spirit. It's that place that's always been deep within me that knows truth. It is my conscience. It is the God that's within. It is my true inner nature, my Buddha nature, the Jesus within. However you want to say it, these are just all words and devices. You know, don't attach to the words. If there's one thing you could pick up this weekend, we're going to be using a lot of different words that means the same thing. And we're just plagiarizing off of Bill Wilson because he does the same thing in the big book. But don't attach to the words. Attach to what the words point to. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. I can ask myself a question. How am I growing in understanding and effectiveness? This is not an overnight matter. It should continue, there's that word again, for our lifetime. Now here's the essence of the 10th step directions. And for a long time I thought that this was just something that we do at night. And in the 12 and 12, in step 10, it kind of hints to that we do this at night. And some people get confused. The best way that I've heard the 10th step described to me, and this is not original, but the way this gentleman described the 10th step to me is a walking moment-by-moment meditation. A walking meditation throughout my day. So here's the directions. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, ask God at once to remove them. I want God to remove them at once. But that's not what it says. I'm supposed to at once ask God to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately, and we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And it's real obvious that what those directions point to are the things that we've learned in steps 4 through 9. And then it says, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. They're pointing us to step 12 already. And love and tolerance of others is our code. Am I bringing that principle into the meetings that I go to? Love and tolerance of others is my code. Am I bringing those principles into the workplace? Am I practicing love and tolerance of others is my code with my family, in the home, with my friends? Has some really neat 10-step promises. My personal opinion, and I hope you're not going to get a lot of opinion from me this weekend, more so you get experience, but my personal opinion is that as a newcomer, I would have really rather to hear these 10-step promises than the 9-step promises. And I'm not minimizing the 9-step promises. They're wonderful and they've come true in my life. But check out these 10-step promises. Put yourself in the perspective of a newcomer, brand new to AA, still detoxing from alcohol. The thought of a drink is still on you like a beast. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. You mean by the time I get to this point, I've ceased fighting alcohol? I've ceased fighting anyone or anything, including the person who cut me off in traffic, including the person who's taken too long in the grocery line? What a promise.
Or somebody in my home group that's not acting the way I want them to?
Well, I never have that problem, so that's why I didn't mention it.
I can't relate.
For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. What a promise. If tempted, we recoil as from a hot flame. Now, this next promise is probably the only promise in the big book that my sponsor claims hasn't come true for me. We react sanely and normally. I love my sponsor.
Good question.
What's normal? You have just set me up for a new quote that I learned a few months ago. I won't take credit. It comes from a gentleman in California by the name of Ken. And Ken says, there are no normal people, just people who haven't shared with you yet. And we'll find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes after a heck of a lot of work. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Question I can ask myself in regards to alcohol, in regards to many areas of my life, in regards to other addictions, have I been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected? We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. The problem has been removed. The problem has been removed. Recovered. ED. Not always recovering for the rest of my life. We are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show others precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book and of our 12-step program. Bill was just being lofty, right, when he wrote that? Yeah, he was just trying to sound good. Yeah. Didn't really mean recovered, right? He didn't really mean the problem has been removed, right? Because I tell you what, if I have to go through the rest of my life struggling, I'm going to drink. 5.5 months and I was ready to put a gun to my head. Until some people finally came into my life and introduced me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The program, the 12 steps. Which is something they had been trying to do for 12 months. I hadn't heard enough. We get to get free in here. And there's a big difference between freedom and relief.
But notice that immediately following him saying that it's been removed, it gives us a condition and it also gives us a warning.
We are neither cocky nor afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And somewhere in there it says, we are not cured.
Next paragraph.
So it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent, based on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Here's something to meditate on. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activity. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line. All we wish, it is the proper use of the will. We actually get taken to the place where our will gets aligned with God's will. It is no longer this struggle with, well, is this my will? Is this God's will? I can't do this. My will is bad. God's will is good. I can't do my will. I can't enjoy my life. I'll be the hole in the donut. I'm going to be miserable. Let's go drink. We get taken to a place where we can actually align, and it's the proper use of our own will. We get to align our will with God's will, which tells me that I come to a place in my recovery, I come to a place in my life where I'm going to actually want to do the next right thing. That's an amazing deal for a guy like me. That doesn't mean I don't get tempted. That doesn't mean that sometimes I don't act out on those temptations. That doesn't mean I don't fall short and I don't make mistakes. What it means is that I'm a human being. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, and I will fall short. But there are quite often many moments throughout my day where the first thought, I heard it for years in the fellowship, you got to disregard your first thought. Your first thought's always a bad thought. It's, you know, it's not the right one. That's not true for me anymore. Quite often, my first thought is the will of God. But then again, I better be calling Bill or talking to Kathy or talking to someone, because I got to be careful, as it says in that How to Listen to God pamphlet, because it left to my own devices, left up to me, we'd be having a Kool-Aid party at 9 o'clock tonight. So You gotta be careful with that kind of stuff.
Excuse me? Does that come after the washing of the feet?
Well, Hitler had power. Hitler had great power. Well, I won't get into that. But tap into this power, but be real careful what you do with this power. Be real careful with it and stay connected to other people in the fellowship. And as I said last night, I can't stress this enough. All this stuff we're talking about, when we talk about some other meditation exercises, some other prayers that we've done, some of them may seem spooky and lofty, but that's fine. Do all that stuff. Go as deep as you want. But do everything along with and never instead of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And always stay connected to the fellowship. And always keep the service piece. Always keep the circle and triangle.
Something I think is interesting is that on page 84, after it says we have entered the world of the Spirit, like we have said pretty much the 2 days we've been here, making the most of this moment is really the most spiritual way you can live. And you'll notice after on page 84 it says we have entered the world of the Spirit, all of a sudden there's no room for procrastination. It says that we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear in the now. And, you know, I don't necessarily go through the day saying, you know, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear, where is it? You know, I don't go through the day, you know what I mean? But how I use it, he's just using words. He's not necessarily talking about just these four areas we look at. He's talking about as soon as we sense that we're off the beam, we have a way to get back on the beam. It's as simple as that. We don't have to put it into the exact terms or the exact words or whatever. When it becomes a way of life, it's just, oh, you know, I just realize I'm off the beam. I just got off the beam. I just realized that. I have a way to step back and get back on the beam again. repair if I need to. Also, you'll notice that the first thing it says, after it says when these crop up, it says we at once ask God to remove them. That immediately it says to bring God into it first. Because very often just with me and my higher power, with me and my heart, me and my conscience, me and my healthy side, however you want to word it, I could possibly get an answer and I wouldn't even need to call somebody else. But very often it's good to contact somebody else. But notice it says, you know, in the now, I continue to watch for selfish dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, I now ask God to help me with this stuff. I discuss them with someone immediately now. Make amends quickly now, if possible, or the most soonest now that I can possibly do it.
Most soonest?
Most soonest. That's a new word. And then resolutely turn my thoughts now to someone I can help. Not just anybody, but someone I can help. I don't know about anybody else here, but I've spent lots of time trying to help people that I couldn't help. And pretty much knew it right at the beginning, but I'm going to save you. In regard to trying to help people, something that I do, and sometimes I put it into words to them and sometimes I don't, but I don't listen to what people say. I watch their feet. You know, don't tell me what you're going to do. Show me what you're going to do. You know, don't tell me you're going to meditate every morning. Show me you're going to meditate every morning. Don't tell me you're going to this. Show me you're going to do this. You know what I mean? It's kind of interesting because, let me speak for myself. I was such a person that said so many things and just none of it really was based in reality. None of it was based in what I was actually going to do. If I sounded good, I'm going to say that. You know what I mean? Now with the 12 and 12 stuff. Yeah. Thanks.
We'll do it next session.
I can do this quick. There's a couple things in the 12 and 12 that I think can be used as tools throughout the day. And then we'll take a break. Page 90, it talks about it's a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. I hate that. Wait a minute. It's them. The collective them. The life them. When that sentence is meditated on and internalized, that's a profound way of life right there. And don't get me wrong. There are times that, someone hits me or something. You know what I mean? There's a whole different thing with, it's a whole different thing in dwelling on it and turning myself into a victim than having a process to move away from all of that and to just move away from that anxiety and that sense of superiority and that uncomfortability that results from, you know, looking on the outside. I mean, if there was one thing that the fourth step taught me, and that's something that I want to do later, there's many things that the fourth step taught me, but if there's one thing that the fourth step taught me is that it doesn't matter if the outside world changes. There's ways that I can deal with it on the inside that can just change the whole situation without anything else changing. And again, we'll pass along tools like that. And then it talks about on 91, the quick inventory is aimed at our daily ups and downs, especially those where people or new events throw us off balance and tempt us to make new mistakes. Then he gives us a little bit of a process here. It says, in all these situations, we need self-restraint, honest analysis of what is involved, that's two, a willingness to admit our faults to others, that's three, an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere, that's the fourth one. The fifth one is, we need not be discouraged when we fall into error of our old ways, for these disciplines are not easy. And then six, we shall look for progress, not perfection. It gives us a little tool of processing all that. 92, the second full paragraph, is very powerful for me. This, again, is an internalized way of life that can bring a lot of relief. It says, finally, we begin to see that all people, including ourselves, and I love it keeps saying including ourselves. You know, in the first step in the big book, it talks about that like ourselves, these people that hurt us are spiritually blocked. You know what I mean? Like ourselves. If I can see that, you know, these people are just struggling with the same stuff that I'm struggling with. It says that we see that all people, including ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill as well as frequently wrong. And then we approach true tolerance to see that real love for others, other fellows, finally we begin to see that all people, including ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill as well as frequently wrong. And then we approach true tolerance and see what real love for our fellows actually means. It will become more and more evident as we go forward that it is pointless to become angry or to get hurt by people who, like ourselves, are suffering from the pains of growing up. Like ourselves. You know, we're going to fall short just like other people fall short. Then it talks about an evening review. We'll do that tonight. In step 11. It gives us a bunch of prayers and a bunch of promises. It talks about 105. We will report that out of every season of grief or suffering, when the hand of God seemed heavy or even unjust, new lessons for living were learned, new resources of courage were uncovered, and that finally, inescapably, the conviction came that God does move in mysterious ways His wonders to perform. That there's different ways that we can look at this stuff that can bring us relief in the moment. If we can just, like Mike said, pause and step back. Something that is not possible before we go through the beginning process of this program. To pause when agitated or doubtful, that's crazy. Why would I want to do that? I'm right. It's justified anger. Let's lash out. I mean, you know what I mean? But for me today, it's just not an acceptable way of life anymore. I've caused a lot of damage toward a lot of people that I truly care for, and in those moments wasn't very loving. And today I don't want to live that way anymore. And let's take a break until, I guess, 10:30. Or
no.
What is it?
Quarter to 11.
Quarter to 11.